this is Patrick Daly, and welcome to Interlinks. Interlinks is a program about connections, international business, supply chains, and globalization, and the effects these have had on our life, our work, and our travel over recent decades. Today on Interlinks, we're going to be taking a deeper dive into the world of the supply chain with some international experts, colleagues of mine from the Supply Chain Special Interest Group at the Society for the Advancement of Consulting. The last time my colleagues from the Supply Chain Special Interest Group joined me on Interlinks, we spoke about the difficulties that many companies in Europe, America, and Asia have been experiencing due to the turbulence and disruptions of international supply chains all around the world. So we have examined many of these difficulties extensively in previous episodes. And so today we're going to take a look at the flip side of this turbulence and disruption, which is the fact that these conditions also favor opportunity and innovation for those clever enough to spot it, brave enough to go for it, skillful enough to reimagine their businesses and build resilience for an uncertain future. So to discuss these aspects of the supply chain crisis, I'm joined by Antonio Zrilic, founder and managing director of Logico, the Zagreb, Croatia-based logistics consultancy. Welcome, Antonio.
Thank you, and good to be here with you.
Delighted to have you, Antonio. Lisa Anderson, who is president of LMA Consulting Group from the Los Angeles metro area in California, USA. Welcome, Lisa.
Hello, glad to be here.
Great to have you. So, Lisa, maybe start with you. So, you know, we've seen, or I've seen at least, I guess most people have at this stage, clips on the TV and on social media and so on of the ports in Oakland and Los Angeles with, you know, dozens of ships waiting offshore to be docked and unloaded. And we hear stories about the US labor shortages and a squeeze on all types of everyday products at the consumer level, and then materials and so on at the business level. But I guess on the other side of that very negative situation, what kind of innovations and opportunities are you seeing American businesses exploiting almost as a direct result of those pressures?
Well, one is that there is vast amounts of reshoring happening. So companies are moving production back to the U.S. And surrounding areas. So like Mexico, it depends on the product, but they're really moving more towards regional clusters. So what that means is that, you know, if they were producing in China before, most likely they're in the process, one way or another, of moving production closer to the customer, which means, you know, likely North America somewhere. And according to the latest surveys, you know, 85% of executives are looking at reshoring and actively doing it versus only 54% last year. So it's a significant difference. One key client on the quiet is moving 80% of their production back from, they're currently working in Vietnam and China, and they're moving 80% of it back within the next year because they think that's critical to their competitiveness. So that's one topic that they're actively working, although it's, you know, it's not a snap of the fingers.
Sure, it takes quite a while. So interesting, that development, and that's a significant figure, isn't it? You said from 54% to 85% in a year. So presumably when these companies first went to Asia, Vietnam or China, a lot of that was to do with labor arbitrage, and perhaps that they felt that the labor was less expensive there. So as they come back to Mexico or the US or other areas closer to home, and this phenomenon, I guess, is happening in Europe as well, what are they doing technologically? Because they're not going to, I'm guessing, not going to duplicate the number of people they had in Vietnam and China. So technologically, what will they do? How will they structure their production and their supply chain when they do come back closer to home?
Yeah, they're definitely requiring less people. Besides, though, backing up a bit, a lot of folks went overseas, at least from the U.S., expecting it to be lower cost. And of course, from a labor point of view, it was lower cost, and it still is. Well, it still is compared to the U.S. It's not necessarily compared to Mexico. With that said, though, the amount of labor in the products has come down dramatically, and things have really changed in the last several years. And so really, they're not saving nearly what they expected to save, certainly at this point in time, and perhaps even originally. I had a few executives on a panel, and this was several years ago when it was still popular to outsource. And they said that they really didn't achieve the type of savings that they were expecting. And this company was a global company. And so they could just nearshore, meaning like use their facilities in Asia to supply customers in Asia, and they could just start back up in the U.S. at that time. But nevertheless, the folks now are starting to produce closer to home, and they are looking at technology and the use of automation, robotics. They're even looking at 3D printing close to the customer, you know, for certain items, or it depends, of course. But, you know, they're looking at all the different technologies out there to just be more productive, because people also have workers' comp claims, and it's really hard to find people right now. So, like, we are going to have to think differently. So they're definitely looking at technology, but there's a run on a need for technology as well. So that's tricky also.
Yeah. Interesting that you mention 3D printing, or, you know, sometimes referred to as additive manufacturing. And this technology, you know, a lot of us think of it, you know, think of maybe somebody tinkering about and printing kind of plastic toys or something. But this technology has gone a lot further than this. You know, there are metals, there are ceramics, there's even organic material, I think, can be printed now. So are you seeing any evidence of that? On the one hand, right now, and what do you think supply chains might look like in the future if, you know, a large proportion of manufacturing is done using 3D printing?
Generally speaking, 3D printing has been better for like rapid R&D and smaller runs. Although, you know, technology is changing all the time. Like you said, GE did an engine with 3D printing, and they're printing houses, tiny houses and whatnot else. So I see definitely that 3D printing is going to be commonplace in like the distribution centers close to the customers, so they can print up, you know, items that would make sense for small items close to the customers, items that, you know, have to be customized, like a button, the right color button, that kind of thing. So they're putting them in distribution centers, but also actually manufacturers in Southern California. Went to one, I think it was earlier this year, and they had maybe 10, 15 3D printers in this particular manufacturer. So they are starting to, you know, utilize them for, yeah, not high volume production by any means, but certainly for more production, lower volumes in production. So, you know, they're using them where they make sense.
Yeah, it's interesting. I actually was in a factory in Barcelona a couple of years ago, and they were printing dental implants.
That seems great to do.
Quite a volume of them. Okay, that's interesting. So, Antonio, you're in Croatia, and I know this from, you know, some of my more geeky moments looking at, you know, demographic tables of Eastern Europe and so on. So Croatia and some of its neighbors in Eastern Europe, both inside the EU and outside the EU, you've been experiencing a kind of drain of people to Western Europe and declining populations even before COVID. So now, with relatively low levels of vaccination that you have in some of those countries, and the labor shortages due to COVID, and the flow of people to Western Europe, what kind of creative solutions are businesses coming up with to cope with that kind of reality at home in Croatia, Serbia, and so on?
Yes, to fill a little bit details of history, Croatia and this part of Europe served as a pool of people or workforce for Western Europe, and that culminated when Croatia joined the EU in 2013, and it actually it was paralleled with the fact that Croatia was still in a recession after 2008, a big recession, and it was a long time in this part of Europe. So people, there was no job, and people started to go in Europe, in Ireland, in Germany, and so on. And when situation stabilized here, and the growth started in Croatia, Serbia, Bosnia, and so then employers realized that there is no people to hire anymore, and actually these moments were not from one day or on 5 years or 10 years that, that happened. It was actually a process, a long process that we could read from demographic statistics in 15, 20 years back. So I always like to quote Peter Drucker that in many of his books he just said just read statistics, read demography, and you will know what to do how to predict future needs, demands, and everything. So this is not a new process. It's just we neglected it, and now it culminated, and it came with COVID and with other with this new crisis that is lurking. And so I think what we had on one of our supply chain conferences, I think I don't know. 3, 4, 5 years ago, we had this topic as main topic: talent shortages. And there was interesting how one of our clients approached to this problem. He made a survey, internal survey in the company, and asked people. Mostly in logistics, what are the problems? What they see as a problem in this part of the company, and they saw two or three things that are very problematic. It was no feedback. The logistics is very low on priority in companies, and of course there was salaries also were very low, and I think what was good in this example is that they listened what was the problem, and then they acted and did some changes. And this is, I think, answer to your questions, to your question, what to do in this particular situation. And now this situation culminated, and it is not some isolated problem in big companies, and so it's problem now you can see signs on all over the shops and that they hire and they look for people. What is the solution? How I can see it and how my clients approach to this is to try to make partnerships with the employees and to look for ways to motivate people, different ways, innovative ways. One client of mine has also it's small place in Bosnia, and they have also problems with employees, and they started to and it is a how it's called, the lumber company. They manufacture these some products from wood, and it is hard work. It's not very very light to work in this. But they started to employ women on some jobs that are not so heavy and so. And they found that it is they found it very very good because they never asked they never thought about it before, and it is something that we can say it innovative or so my the lesson is ask or look for different demographic groups to employ on some positions that are not common or something like that.
93.9 Dublin South FM.
Let me just give you a view of some of the things that are happening here. So we're up here in northwestern Europe. So In this area, so countries like the UK, Ireland, where I am, Netherlands, Belgium, France, and so on. So in this region, on top of everything else that's going on, you have Brexit, which is affecting all of those countries and trade flows. So one thing I'm seeing is a kind of a diversification and regionalization of both sourcing and exporting. And that's very noticeable right here in Ireland. So the normal flows into and out of Ireland for export and import to the continent of Europe used to flow through Great Britain, was called the land bridge. And with Brexit, that's become slower and more complex and so on. So whereas before, between Ireland and the continent of Europe, there were maybe six or so direct ferry links per week. Now there's something like more than 40, and that's come about in less than a year. So that's a major kind of transformation. And then people who would have been either exporting to the UK or sourcing from the UK, a lot of them have diversified new markets for export, or they've diversified new markets from where they will buy products to bring in, particularly consumer products. And something I've really noticed this year is a big, big uptick in interest in automation. So I'm working on several projects where people are really seriously looking at automation in manufacturing plants and in distribution centers, but on the warehouse side of manufacturing. So the interface, say, between packaging lines and warehouses, and in distribution centers, obviously that's warehousing. So we're seeing things like AGVs, which are devices that will carry pallets or boxes horizontally over long distances. And that will basically replace either a fork truck driver or somebody with a powered pallet truck, or pallet jack, as they call it in the US. And inside warehousing operations, we've seen quite a lot of interest in automated storage and retrieval systems for order picking for pallets and for boxes and totes, with high productivity order picking systems. Because I've had a number of customers who really suffered during COVID, where their online business increased rapidly, and the labor you need to fulfill orders for e-commerce is much greater than you would need, say, for filling orders to your own shops or whatever. So that went up. At the same time, their people went down, because the people were either infected or self-isolating or didn't want to come to work. They were afraid to come to work. So those two things hit at the same time. So there's now real serious interest in automation. And as I said, I'm involved in projects like that directly myself. So maybe the question now for all of us, so just jump in here as it occurs to you. What advice would you give to businesses now looking to build some sort of resilience for the future in advance of unanticipated shocks? So not now talking about COVID, but saying, okay, in the future, we've seen what has happened, what's been happening. So what kind of advice would you give to clients of yours looking to the future to build in that resilience, whether it's against climate change or natural disasters or political instability or another public health scare? Well, what would you be saying to your clients, Lisa?
Well, first thing is that they have to start expecting these types of disruptions more frequently, unfortunately. It seems like it's going to become commonplace. So you're going to have to get good at being resilient to the point of your question. And one of the strategies that we've been seeing is clients looking at sales inventory operations planning, or SIOP. That's definitely gaining in popularity as clients want to scale up to meet these increasing volumes that are at least happening in the U.S. and North America, while also planning to gain some resiliency so they can scale up, scale down, change the mix, et cetera, quickly. So sales inventory operations planning is where they are looking at their customers' demand and more, I would say, further into their supply chain, gaining better visibility to changes in the demand, and getting closer information to customers within their supply chain. And then utilizing that to plan more flexible capacity. So, you know, goes to, if you can figure out what you're going to need ahead of time, you can at least what types of products or what you're expecting overall, and keep yourself still more resilient to be able to change, then you can plan for staffing and cross-training needs so that you can be more resilient, storage needs, and or you might be able to keep some 3D 3D printers. You can keep some warehouses on the outside so that you can ramp up or ramp down. If you're partnering, I'm seeing more partnering with customers, suppliers, and other partners, even competitors. So, you know, just looking at new ways to look at your supply, your ability to supply your customers, maybe even partnering with some competitors to be able to ramp up quickly and doing the same for them. It doesn't have to be a competitor, but it's just that, you know, that's one of the things that I've seen happening quite a bit, or people looking at their base capabilities and seeing how they can, you know, new people they can partner with. And as you've seen, folks increasing their ability to digitize their supply chain and their operations so that they can respond more quickly and provide value to their, provide different kinds of value to their customers and their, you know, even their suppliers. So really, I'd say better aligning their demand with their supply and giving them the opportunity to set up a supply chain and an operations that will be more resilient and more prepared for changing conditions.
Okay, very good. And Antonio, what advice would you be giving to clients looking to the future, say separately from COVID, but just, you know, what the hell else is going to happen?
How am I going to do? On Friday and Saturday, I had a workshop with one client, and they all and I told them you have to be prepared and anticipate this kind of interruptions, disruptions, and so. And they said, well, we couldn't anticipate a COVID pandemic or so. But I said, okay, but you could although you could anticipate some kind of global disruption. But closer to people is you don't have to anticipate pandemic. Although we had SARS, Ebola, and so on, and bird flu, and so on. So we had some things that we could see in the future. But we could, for example, anticipate what would we do if we lose, I don't know, 30% of our sales volume, or we lose 50% of our sales volume, or 70%. What will happen? What kind of costs can we cut? Which people will have to go? And so on. So this is kind of scenarios that you could anticipate and prepare for them, and then and have ready some some actions in this cases. So it is not that you can't anticipate anything or predict anything. I had a client that he at the moment when we worked together, he was exporting most of their products in Russia it was, I don't know, 2012-13 or something like that. And it happens that there were embargo on Russia from Europe and from America, and they lost 70% of their sales volume, and it is catastrophe. They are still alive, but you have to have this kind of scenarios. What will happen if this happens? It is not question what is the cause of this. It could be any cause, yeah. This is main. I think this is main message from me that you should anticipate, predict these kind of scenarios and prepare for them. And one other thing is to try to shift your fixed costs to variable costs. Something what Lisa said. You have to be flexible, not only on demand side, but also on this cost side, where you have to be also very flexible. In the there are a lot of things that you could do. I know outsourcing is no more popular, but some kind of tactical outsourcing you could do in order not to to invest a lot of money in equipment or production lines or something like that. Then you have you can lease equipment or something, not to buy it and so on, or some trucks and so. So there are a lot of things that you could do to be more flexible and that you can align your costs with your incomes, and this is also a very strong recommendation.
Okay, so it's interesting. So between both of you, you've got kind of strategies that you're suggesting there, which include diversification. So this is what your guy who was exporting to Russia probably hadn't done. So diversification, yeah. Partnering, which I think you both of you put your fingers on that one, and perhaps deleveraging. Deleveraging your own business, because I guess if you're carrying less baggage in terms of commitments and debts, mm-hmm. and so on. Yeah. That's going to be, I think, a good way to be agile in the future and flexible in the future. And then this one is interesting, moving from fixed to variable costs. I wonder, Lisa, have you noticed this company, flexe.com, flexi.com or flex.com in the US, that's offering warehousing as a service, as a short-term service in the US? Have you come across that company, and have you seen them being active?
I haven't come across it in, I've heard of them, but I have not come across them being used. And I am in the area of Southern California that has the most warehouses in the US, because it's in the corridor where you bring it over from Asia and then go to the rest of the US. Generally speaking, what's going on here is more 3PLs. And really, we just have not enough space, and we continue to move east. There just isn't a lot of space at all, especially these days, because they're just completely full, whether it's because of high demand. We're bringing over, we still have products from the wrong seasons from during the pandemic, or just for whatever reason. But I am seeing warehousing as a service, but also transportation as a service.
Yeah.
I'm seeing more and more groups that seem to be successful popping up to fill those types of needs. People are looking for fill-in type services, similar to like finding temps, if you will, to run a manufacturing operation.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting time for all of us in supply chain, and it looks like we're all going to be very busy through 2022. I guess you both feel that, yes?
Yeah,
I think for sure. Oh, sorry about that, Antonio. Yeah. There's what I'm also seeing is that anyone who is even approaching retirement is starting to drop off like flies, which is quite unfortunate. It just means the rest of us are going to be extremely busy, and there's a really big need for supply chain type. And I'm including operations in supply chain, so it's going to be a interesting next several years, that's for sure.
Sure is. Well, thank you, guys. Thanks to you both. It's been a pleasure. As always, we've been beaten by the clock. We could stay on here probably for an hour shooting the breeze about supply chain. So thanks very much. Been a pleasure, as I said. Wish you continued success, and no doubt you're going to have plenty of success next year helping your clients in your respective areas. So thanks again. All the best.
Thank you. It was fun. Bye.
Yes, thank you. It was fun.
Very welcome. Thanks also to our listeners for tuning in. And for any comments or questions, just drop me a line on pdaily@albalogistics.com. So in the meantime, keep well and stay safe until next time.